I'm sorry what I did to you. Don't talk, just listen. I'm sorry what I did to you. I couldn't help it. Don't know why I did it.
Welcome back, everyone, to Wicked Wives. I'm your host, Alyssa, and I have a Free with me again.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, what's up? How are you today?
I'm good. Episodes in a row? It's been great.
Yeah, you sound like the guy off of SpongeBob. It's like Mr. Normal. Hi, how are you?
Hey, how are you? What lovely weather we're having today.
I'm just normal.
Yeah, whatever. I just want to cut right to the chase. First of all, thank you for having me again. And then,
yep, anytime.
So second, I think this week's episode is going to be a little bit different. Is it right?
Yeah. So hey, Free. Guess what?
What?
Did you know The Nightmare on Elm Street by fucking Craven, what's his first name? Wes Craven is based off of a real life thing.
Yeah, so like a dude was killed Johnny Depp and
yeah, definitely. There was like Freddy Krueger running around.
Yeah, the butter knives.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, no, that's not. It's not legit. Like, the person Freddy Krueger never existed, but the storyline is based on an actual story, and it is a gruesome one that we're gonna do today, right now.
Sweet, let's go.
All right, so back in 1970, we're gonna just jump right in. The people of Cambodia suffered horrible living conditions and even income unevenly across the whole entire country.
I'd just say that they're still, like, I went after 50 years, probably still dealing with that.
Yeah. Well, this is going to sound familiar in a lot of ways to, like, what us as a country is going through right now. So just listen up, because it's relatable right now. So people who lived in urban areas were filthy rich, like, did not have to do anything to, like, work for their money. And then you have rural areas who were poor and had to rely on farming and doing all of that to survive. Now, during the Cambodian Civil War, the Cambodian monarchy was loyal to their government, but very, very corrupt. Now, this also led to a few underground groups being formed, including one known as the Khmer Rouge. And I'm really hoping I'm going to pronounce all these right, because there's some words in here that's a little hard for me to pronounce, but I've practiced them all day, so I really hope I got it right. So, it's called the Khmer Rouge. Khmer Rouge.
Okay.
Yeah, Khmer Rouge. They were a communist group who wanted to overthrow their corrupt government and try to focus on an agrarian society. And an agrarian society means that they pretty much base the community on growing farmland, crops, and pretty much seeing how much the land can make as a nation and can accumulate. So they pretty much just want to farm land. They just want to live off the land.
Just farm, man, and be peaceful, is that what you're saying?
Yes, a peaceful farm community.
Okay, that sounds fair.
Yeah, it's not bad. But they went about it a very wrong way, and we're about to find that out. Now, one man in particular who was a part of the Khmer Rouge or Khmer Rouge was named Pol Pot. That's not his God-given name. He was born Salath Sar. So say that five times fast. Salath Sar.
And so his name is Salath Sar, but on the streets they call him Pol Pot.
Yeah, they call him Pol Pot.
Seriously?
Yeah, for real.
Hold your back, because here comes Pol Pot.
Oh yeah, Pol Pot's coming. I mean, this guy had it big with the embassy in China, Vietnam. I mean, he had connections, especially with Khmer Rouge. Now, in 1950, he studied in France for a little bit. And he joined a bunch of communist groups, as one does, going to France and studying. In 1953, he ended up returning home and combined Stalinist and, Maoist. So Stalinist and Maoist theories to come up with a refined focus for an agrarian society. So, he pretty much took Stalin teachings and put it together with the Maoist teachings and was like, we're going to make our own very... What?
I'm incredibly interested to see like how Wes Craven fits into all of this.
Oh, don't worry. We're talking about the war right now, and like, it has a point, okay? Otherwise, I wouldn't be telling you all this. I promise. We're going to have a little trip of history, and then it'll, at the end, that's kind of where all of it kind of connects, and you'll be like, oh, I see. Okay. So, yeah. He became a great influencer in the Khmer Rouge, but also, like I said, in China and the United Kingdoms, he had a really big name, and he had connections. So when the revolution started in 1975, they decided to let Pol Pot lead the country of Cambodia. He was about 50 at this time, because I know you wanted to ask, and I did the math. So,
thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Now, as Pol Pot took power, his first number of business was to make sure that the rich went to the rural areas and helped with the farm.
They sure also... wasn't to change his fucking nickname.
Yeah, no, he keeps this until he dies, so it's...
He's just cool with it then, okay.
Yep, he was like, they call me Pol Pot. I'm probably not even pronouncing it right. I mean, this is China, so it's probably like Pol Pot or something, but like, it looks like Pol Pot, so anyway. Okay. So they went to the farm. They sent the rich people to the farm to go ahead and like help farm crops and build trenches. But because the rich didn't really know anything except for scam people and make money, the crops either died because of they were not being taken care of properly, or inedible because they weren't being taken care of properly, so they had to be disposed of immediately.
So like, let's make it a religion based around a farm community. Oh, but I forgot, I'm not very good at farming.
Yeah, well, I see what he's trying to do. Okay, I see that he's trying to be like, we have way too many rich people who don't know what it's like to be poor, so we're gonna take you guys and you're gonna have to live with the poor so you understand what it you know feels like, and also you need to help the poor. Okay, I get it.
Okay.
But don't send people that don't, like, I'm not gonna walk into a mechanic area and be like, all right, move aside, let me show you what I can do, and I like I have, it's no like, idea.
Like entrusting our 8-year-old daughter to make us dinner and then us, right, starving.
Exactly. It's like, here you go. Do something you've never done before in your life. Let's go. You can do it. So, I get it, but at the same time, that's kind of a stupid move. Anyway, so after they had to throw away all the crops because they were horrible, this created a huge shortage of food supply and also medical supply, which is understandable. This also led to disease and starvation for many families, and a lot of people in Cambodia would die of starvation. A lot.
How long did he like make them do this? Like,
he ended up
like a week of not working, you would just kind of like go back to home.
He ended up ruling for 2 centuries.
So
not centuries, decades. So 2 decades this man has ruled. But I don't think he was really in Cambodia for some of it, because they get him. You'll see.
Okay, so like for about 20 years, this guy had this rule that everyone would need to swap places and shit.
Yes.
And then people died for 20 years and no one did anything about it?
Yep. They were like, this is better than what we had, I guess. And then just let him do whatever he wanted to do. So, yeah, I don't know how disease and starvation was better than what they had, but I mean, okay, man, whatever. So yeah, the food supply and medical supplies were scarce. And of course, like I just said, it led to disease and starvation, killing everyone. Also, families were split up through this whole entire thing. Like, they would take families and just split them up. You go this way, you go that way, you help here, you help there. And these families didn't see each other for years. Something else that's really shitty is, and this isn't funny, but during all of this, many religious groups were targeted, as well as Christians, Buddhists, but most importantly, the Cham Muslims. And they were all executed. The Muslims were targeted very hard the most. Like, all of them were targeted, but they mostly laser-focused on the Muslims, killing about 500,000 Muslims, which is about 70% of the group's members. Now, this is the part I was like, you're going to be a little... Another group that was targeted were intellectual people, such as teachers, lawyers, doctors, clergy, and anyone who wore glasses. Yeah.
That'd be so fun.
I know. That's why I was like,
"You're smart." I'd be like, "I promise you, I'm not."
Like, I have 20/20 vision, but like, I need glasses to read. So if I'm reading a book and they come in and I have glasses on, I'm fine. Yeah.
I don't need them, guys. See, look, I don't need them.
Yeah, like, get contacts or some shit, because if you have glasses on, you're getting killed.
Imagine having to go outside and you have to take your fucking glasses off.
Right, like, people walking around in poles, like, oh, sorry.
You got in your pocket, huh?
Nothing. Is that glasses I see on your shirt?
They're my grandmother's.
Oh my god, yeah. So if you wore glasses, you were executed. So they would blindfold the members of all of these, you know, religions and people who wore glasses, apparently. And they would hold public executions where people would just sit and watch as each member was killed horribly. Sometimes they didn't even take them. They just killed them in the street. And I'm going to warn you guys right now, I do have a picture of a line of people blindfolded and like them walking with them. But if you look this up, please beware that there is some fucked up images. There was a couple of like these, it was fucked up. There was like families screaming while the dad is getting his throat slit. It was horrible. Okay. So, caution if you look up the Cambodian Revolution, please.
Graphic.
Yeah.
Very graphic.
It was really bad. Now, it is a good time to mention that a lot of the Hmong families were fleeing to America to get away from the bullshit that they were putting Cambodia through. I mean, honestly, I don't blame them. They were literally coming across to get away.
I don't want to fucking wear my glasses again. Jesus.
Yeah. But we're going to focus on the war for a little bit, and then we'll go back to the people fleeing. So, While all this is happening, you know, all this bullshit, in 1979, Vietnam looked at Cambodia and was like, you know, they're pretty weak right now. They're dying and disease and starvation. Let's invade them. So they did. And Pol Pot fled before he got captured. So he survived. That's why I said he was in charge for about two decades. So, because he fled. So, he was technically in charge. Now, finally, the United Nations stepped in and was like, hey, we need you to calm the fuck down.
Yeah. And at this point, the Vietnam War is in full swing, right?
The Civil War, I do believe, was about to happen. Because it wasn't the Vietnam War. I can't remember. There was another war that was about to happen, but I can't remember when it was.
Vietnam was 55 to 75, so it was the Desert Storm, right?
Yeah. I don't know. I honestly don't. I don't know, because I'm horrible with history. I'm shocked I remembered all this. If I didn't write it down, I would be like, I don't know what date that was, but I'm gonna tell you, shit happened.
The Vietnam War just ended a couple of years ago, so that's weird.
Okay, well, anyway, the UN stepped in and was like, hey, you need to calm the fuck down. And they talked to Pol Pot and the Khmer Rouge, and they were like, hey, let's agree to peace. And they're like, okay. So they had peace, and everything stopped. Didn't really go back to normal 100%, but I mean, they tried. And they decided, the UN decided, that the Rouge and Pot needed to pay for what they've done. So they brought them all to trial. Unfortunately, Pot died before his hearing in 1998. But, it's really frustrating. However, they did charge three of the Rouges, and they are in jail serving life sentences. However, one other member that was being charged apparently wasn't eligible for a trial. I don't know why. It didn't say. But he's being investigated. So, now that the war's over and we see the part of Cambodia right now, we're going to go back to the refugees who fled to America. The U.S. was like, yes, please come here. We want you safe. And they decided that they were going to scatter them to 53 different cities, giving them an opportunity to live how they wanted to live, wearing glasses and all that. And the Hmong had a strong belief system that if they couldn't worship properly, as in doing rituals and saying prayers properly to their gods, that the ancestor spirits would no longer protect them, giving the bad spirits a chance to attack them and latch on to them. Once the evil spirit found them, they would start to have nightmares, including sleep paralysis and pressure on the chest. They called it Bay Guya, or translated to crushed by a ghost. They believed that when the nightmares begin, you must seek out a shaman to regain protection from the ancestor spirits. However, being in the U.S. and not in their native land, they had no idea where to get a shaman, or even if they did get a shaman, it wouldn't be a legit one. It's one from the U.S. Everyone knows that if something is made in the U.S., it's shitty, okay? So it's not a real shaman. It's not a legit shaman. So. Hold up. What do you mean? Come on, tell me I'm wrong.
In China is a little garbage, right? Shit for tough over here, okay?
It depends on what you get, okay? It depends on what you get. But that's, I know, true. A shaman from nice shiny America compared to a shaman in Africa, it's not gonna compare, okay?
Fair enough.
Now, the Hmong believed that the victims who were affected by the Asian death syndrome which is what is going to, what they're going to call what's happening, were killed in the spirit world, thus killing them in the real world. So they thought that an evil spirit came and attacked them and crushed them to death, taking their soul with them and killing them. Now, the Asian death syndrome is still around today, and it's known as sudden unexplained nocturnal death syndrome. You know, the SIDS, you know, when you put your newborn baby down for a nap or something, you're constantly watching them because you're terrified they're going to just die in their sleep. Yeah, that's this, the sudden unexplained nocturnal death syndrome. However, I'm here to tell you that there is a 15 to 20% chance for this to happen, and it's mostly found in older adults who have heart issues. So I think you'll be okay.
Jesus, I could just go to sleep and never wake up again. Huh?
Yeah,
like a 15 to 20% chance. So it's like what, one in five? Every 1 in 5 days, I have a chance if I have a heart problem.
Exactly.
Die.
You're gonna go to sleep and not wake up, okay? Now, I did put the link to the webpage I got that information from and the statistics from. I'll put them in the show notes like I always do every single time with all my sources. If you want to check it out, you are more than welcome to. Please do. But that's all I'm going to say on the Asian death syndrome.
So I understand. I'm starting to understand, you know, piece together where all this is coming from.
Yep. And I'm going to tell you the legit story that made it happen. So we're going to flash forward to Nightmare on Elm Street. Wes Craven came across the articles in the Los Angeles Times about 100 Asian men who just died suddenly in their sleep. They were young, they were healthy, they were vibrant, and they just died. And he thought that was an interesting story. He also came across another story of a Hmong family whose son was having horrible nightmares. He told his parents, "If I go to sleep, the thing chasing me will get me." So he tried to stay awake for days, until he finally gave in and fell asleep. His parents were thankful, thinking, you know, he forgot about the crazy story and this is all over, until he started screaming in the middle of the night. And by the time they got to him, he was dead.
Just got full body chills there. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah. It's like, ooh, okay. Now, Craven decided to create something he knew that would make a terrifying story. Craven knew that the most peaceful thing to a human is sleep, and disturbing that would be absolutely horrifying. He got the name Freddy Krueger from his bully throughout school. He even named another villain in his older work, The Last House on the Left, after the bully as well, naming him Krug. So,
Freddy Krueger was his school bully?
Yep. Freddy Krueger was the guy who bullied him all through school, and it stuck with him, and he's like, "I'm gonna name you Freddy Krueger."
Okay, so I get the idea, the you know, the monster and everything, and I get the name, but then
yep.
Where the fuck does the knives and stuff come into play? What about the sweater and shit?
You know what I'm saying? You asked that at the right time. So he had his name and he needed a look. He found a scientific study done on the most abrasive colors to the human eye and found that it was red and green, which is the colors of Freddy Krueger's sweater.
Christmas.
Yep. Also, this is kind of a cool tidbit to the comic freaks in the audience. The design is based off of the comic Plastic Man. He said no matter how Plastic Man changed or morphed into something, he could be recognizable by his colors, which is kind of what he wanted Freddy Krueger to be recognized as. You recognize the sweater immediately and the collars red and green. Even if he's morphed into like a fucking goat or anything, if you see red and green nearby in the dream, you know he's near.
Okay.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Plastic Man.
All right. Yeah, it's really cool. I didn't know he got his look idea from Plastic Man.
It makes sense now, though. I mean, yeah. If you look up the comic, remember in the movie where his like arms would stretch out and shit, mm-hmm. and he would turn into different creatures. Even in like the newer movie, like Freddy versus Jason, you see mm-hmm. the that happen. That's it. It's crazy.
Yeah, I think it's really well thought out and it's awesome. So he has his look, he has his name. Now he needs a weapon. He wanted to create something that anybody could come up with and would do a lot of damage to his victims. He wanted Freddy to be able to tease his victims in a human way, but be able to kill them in a gruesome, unthinkable way, which is exactly what he did in the movies. Like, Freddy Krueger would tease them and taunt them, playing on their self-insecurities, and then he'd just attack them by punching a hole through their heart.
Maybe just the combo of Robert Englund and Wes Craven together is just insane.
Robert Englund is a fucking god, okay? He's amazing. So, he wanted them to die in a horrific way. And Craven was quoted saying, "Nature is full of stabbing instruments, claws, teeth, horns. I thought the claws of the cave bear must be buried somewhere in our subconscious. So that claw, which is from nature or animals, was combined with what is one of the most specifically human parts of our anatomy, which is our hands. The human hand is so much more dexterous than any other animals. Many scientists speculate that that has gone hat in hand, if you will, with the development of our brains. The more developed our brains have gotten, the more clever our hands have gotten, and vice versa. So that became the instrument. Rather than anything he would leave someplace and then pick up, it was something that he actually had on him." So.
It's absolutely genius. Like, when I think of film content, I'm just like, do math, work brain. This man is like actually doing scientific studies to figure out what weapon he wants to use his fictitious serial killer to use. Like, that's impressive.
I mean, I relate to this so hard because I write books on my side note, and I have literally looked up how to get blood out of a wooden floor because I needed it for my book. I had to look up like what pressure points in your body would you bleed out immediately on. Like, I get it. I get the research part, and it's so awesome to know that like he went through all this and came up with something fucking amazing. It gives me hope.
Piecing together monsters, like, that's incredible.
Yeah, and for him to just look down and be like, you know what, your hand's gonna be the weapon, not an axe or like a freaking machete or something, like, you know, cliche. He's like, nah, we're gonna make your hand the weapon. Now this is a really freaky story I'm about to tell you. You have this sweater, you have his weapon. Now we're going to talk about his hat. You know, the little fedora hat he wears or whatever. He took that from childhood again. He says that a drunk man came up to his window one night wearing the hat. He stood there and stared at Craven, making him hide under his blanket. He hid for like what seemed like hours, and when he came back up to check if the man was still there, he was still there staring at him. So wow. He was like, okay, and the guy like slowly backed up but kept eye contact with Craven until he reached the corner of the apartment building and then disappeared. And then it hit Craven. He was like, oh my god, that's the entry to my apartment building. So he jumped up, ran out in the hallway to get his brother, and while he was running to get his brother, he heard the apartment entryway door open and close. Now his brother went down there with a baseball bat, which, you know, great brother, go for it, and he didn't find anything at all. He was just like, he like just poof. So that's fucking creepy. Craven said the idea of an adult who was frightening and enjoyed terrifying a child was the origin of Freddy. And like I said, by the time the movie hit theaters, the death toll of the Asian death syndrome had reached around 100 young, healthy Asian males. They were all healthy. There was nothing wrong with them, not even a heart murmur or anything like that. But they never found a reason for all the deaths. They literally cannot explain it. It just makes a really great story for Hollywood.
Well, okay. You literally taking all of that and just piecing together a monster. Jesus.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great story to go off of. I mean, the sudden death and nobody can explain it. And then that story with the son in the room and he just screams, like, yeah, that's a good story. But yeah, that's the origin story of Nightmare on Elm Street, guys. Freddy Krueger. He came from a Cambodian civil war. Yeah, I wanted to do something a little different this time because we do true crime all the time, and we're supposed to be doing like paranormal stuff and spooky stuff too. And I was like, you know what? Let's do something fun. So we played that game with Mom and Dad when they visited. And that card that said that this classic horror film is based off of true stories. And I was like, oh my God, let's do those. So next, yeah the card says that Psycho and Child's Play is based off of a true story. Those two. So,
sweet.
If y'all want to hear the story of those, let us know, because I'm actually kind of curious about Child's Play.
Yeah, you should definitely look into that for sure.
Okay, I will. Well, guys, thank you so much for joining us again for a Wicked Wives episode. I will be posting pictures on the Twitter and the Instagram, so go check that out in the link tree. And then next week I'm supposed to be streaming instead of a podcast episode, so I will let you know if I'm dropping an episode of streaming. It'll be all on the Twitter, so keep your eyes out for it.
I'm gonna follow you on Twitter now, so I'll definitely be looking out for that.
All right, sweet. Okay, guys. Until next time, love you.
Thanks, guys. See ya.